This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hey everyone, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. I've been needing a quick getaway with my family, and the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe is the perfect vehicle to take us there. It has standard third row seating, so I'm able to pack my entire family, plus pets in the car, while also having enough room for our camping essentials. Available H-Track all-wheel drive will get us through any dirt trails, and available dual wireless charging pads will ensure we never have to worry about getting stuck with a dead phone in the middle of nowhere. Visit HyundaiUSA.com. or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I know you'll be all right, even when times get hard, and you feel like you're in the dark. You will see just how beautiful life can be when you soften your heart. You can finally start to live your truthiest life.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to The Truthiest Life. This is the second part of the episode with Sylvie Lloyd, ex-member of the cult slash sex cult called Nexium and DOS. If you missed part one, it's linked in the show notes below this, and you're going to need to start there to have context for this episode. In the second half, we learn how Sylvie met her husband through Nexium and how Keith required his approval and the rules he put into place that she had to oblige by. We learn what her family thought of this entire thing, and we get to understand how DOS, the quote-unquote sex cult part of this, came to be, very different than how many think. We learned what it is, how Sylvie got involved, and what it meant to be a master and a slave, and we also get to see how it all fell apart and Sylvie got her freedom back. As always, I thank you all for bringing compassion to this episode, to Sylvie, and I thank Sylvie for her strength in sharing her story and, of course, for choosing to share it on The Truthiest Life. Here's the rest of the episode and just another content warning that we are going to be talking about sexual abuse. And you and your husband, John, you mentioned that he was in the stands when they were showing the pictures of you around. Still your husband, but he was also your husband. He became your husband through Nexium, is that correct?
Yeah. And I mean, that is one extremely strange. Well, it's not, I say strange because I think I still have shame around it, which is, it is what it is. But that was all part of kind of just so entrenched in the cult. I felt like the only way that I was going to be allowed to have a relationship was if it was something that Keith gave me permission to have, because he honestly had, I'd had boyfriends from the UK during that time, and he'd always give me these ideas that I was just living out my indoctrination and like this would be a bad relationship for me and I'd end up ending the relationship. But he was never saying like, because I want to control you, but everything he was saying was like, oh, okay, like Keith knows best and like he's got my best interests at heart is the way that I would think about this. And so I'd end up breaking up with these boyfriends and really thinking like the only way I'm going to, because I wanted to get married and have a family and have children. And I was like, the only way I think this is going to happen is if it's a relationship that's kind of condoned by Keith. And so the way that John and I got together was that I went to Keith first and said, like, what do you think of me having a relationship with John? And at the time I was saying, I even was like, I'm going to ask him if he'd be willing to marry me. Like, would this be okay if I asked him if he'd be willing to marry me? And then I can also stay in Albany. So it was like, this was me presenting it like it's an enticing thing so that it could be allowed. And Keith said, yes, it could be, but it should be a business relationship for the first 2 years. And there should be no, I should look at it as a platonic relationship. And so I was like, okay. But in my head, I was like, no, that's not what I'm going to do. But I thought, great. Like, this means I can have a relationship. And so this is the kind of thing that was like considered pretty normal in ESP. And now when I look at it like that, I'm like, that is very not what you'd consider normal of how a relationship would start.
Did your family have something to say about this?
My family were very shocked, obviously, because they were in England at the time and they didn't know my plans. So the way that they found out is I spoke to John and I was like, hey, like, would you consider marrying me? I still laugh because I'm like, oh my God, like, I cannot believe that this is how this happened. But it did, and we're still here. So anyway, and he was like, yeah, I'd consider it. And so then we basically got married, but literally probably a month later. And I remember about 4 days later, I told my family after I had spoken to John about 4 days after that's what I was going to do. And yeah, I would like to go back and really ask them what they thought. Because I think one thing about English culture too is kind of like, they probably had a lot to say about it behind my back, not in a horrible way, but just like, you don't necessarily step into other people's lives. I think my dad was like, we need to meet him on Skype at the time. That's how they met him. And I remember my dad saying things to John, like, are you sure you really want to do this? I was like, surely you should be saying that to me. Well, that's another issue. But yeah, and then he basically, my mom flew out to meet him and be there at our wedding, which was in a courthouse, basically signing papers. But yeah, that's how she met John. And it was just all, I think it was so shocking and uncomfortable to them that it was probably, they didn't really know what to do about it. And I was 27. So also, I guess by the time you're that age, it's not like they can say, you know, you're not allowed to marry this guy.
So to clarify here, you and John were initially first married so that you could stay in the US. Like, you presented it as a business. Is that what you meant by a business transaction?
That wasn't my spin on it, but that's how I presented it to Keith, because I thought that's was what Keith would allow.
Got it. But you were having feelings for John and...
No, yeah, I've been attracted to John for a long time, and he had been married at one point and then he was divorced. And so we had been working together on a project within ESP for a long time at that point. So we'd been speaking every single day and we'd gotten pretty close. And by working closely together. And so it wasn't like, I don't even know this guy and here, will you marry me? Like, I had gotten to know him well and I was very attracted to him. So that's why, you know, I actually did want to have a relationship with him, but I was trying to finagle it to be allowed by Keith. And I felt like that was a good plan, the one that I came up with.
You and I discussing it now, we call it a cult. But when you're working, you know, age 27, you're within this organization, are you referring to it as a cult at that point? Is your family referring to it as a cult?
No. They had classes even where, like, some people call this a cult. It's not a cult for all of these reasons. So we were further trying to address that, you know, defend that it wasn't a cult. So no, for sure people, you weren't like, hey, I'm in a cult.
Okay. But you met your husband, John, through Nexium. You were part of this big organization working together. And you were 27 years old. So within Nexium was also DOS, which got a lot of public attention because of its salaciousness, as the word I believe you used. And I think it's a really appropriate word. What is DOS, and at what age do you begin your life in DOS?
So actually, very soon after me and John got married, literally probably 2 months, maybe a month later even, I was approached by someone who was a very close friend of mine within the organization called Monica, who was like, hey, you seem to be really struggling. You don't seem like you've been happy since you've been with John. I've got a project, a secret project that I feel like, you know, could change everything for you, could get you everything you've ever wanted in your life. It has nothing to do with Nexium or Keith. but it's a secret. And in order to find out what the secret is and to join, you need to give me some collateral. And that was a word we'd already been introduced to a bunch, like giving collateral to be able to do things was kind of like already extremely normalized. And so I was like, well, what kind of thing do you need? And she's like, come up with a story or something that would be damaging to you if it ever got public. That, and like, you give it to me and I'll hold it and then I'll tell you the secret. So I know that I have your trust and that you will not break the secret, because if you break the secret, we'll make this thing public. In the first, I sort of found it funny, but again, this kind of thing was not that abnormal given everything else that I'd been through in ESP. So I was like, okay. And I came up with some different stories and nothing was like strong enough for her. She kept saying, no, this isn't good enough. It's not good enough.
So you were making up stories. They weren't true stories.
Yeah. She said, it doesn't have to be true. And I was like, how weird. Okay. But then what we landed on was like some crazy story of how I was like a sex obsessed prostitute or something. And I was writing a confessional to my family and she was like, it has to be in an envelope with their address on it, so that I will send it if you ever break the secret. That was the first layer of collateral for me to even find out like what this was. Well, it wasn't even just to find out what it was. It was to get into the secret project. So that's how DOS was presented to me. And then once I had given that and she was like, okay, now I'm your master and you're my slave. And I was like, whoa, I didn't see that coming. And again, I was kind of finding it funny when she first told me, because Monica was someone I was really close with. I kind of really loved her and like a lot. She was a close friend. If you can imagine your close friend doing this with you, you might be like, well, that sounds really weird. But like the way she presented it is, I'm your master, you're my slave. You have to do absolutely everything I say, and I'm going to make you a better person. Like, this is, some of these things are going to be really challenging, but when you do them, you're going to be that person you want to be. And that was already like a hook for me by that point. And so in some ways I felt like, oh wow, like amazing. She's going to help me finally be a better partner in relationships. And like, yeah, just like, basically I just felt like I wasn't a good person. And I think that was right from the start of ESP. And I thought, she's going to make me a good person. So that's how it was presented. And yeah, like, there's so many different ways that you could go into it. But one of she was like, one of the first things that she tasked me to do, because she said, I'm going to give you these tasks and you're going to need to do them. And I'm going to collect more and more collateral from you that will ensure that you absolutely do the task. So the collateral was there to be the incentive that you would do the tasks and not, you know, not tell anyone what was going on.
Hey, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. As a nostalgic voice from your past, I'm here to remind you that amongst the stressful and chaotic existence we live in 2024, you deserve to get away. It's time for a vacation, no matter when you're hearing this. And let me tell you how you'll get there. The 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe. Want to bring the family to the mountains with the Santa Fe's available H-Track all-wheel drive? Well, it's got standard third-row seating and available dual wireless charging pads for the kids who just want to stare at their phone and not talk to you. You know what I mean. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org.
That's trinityschool.org.
You're now part of the secret society, right?
I'm now part of the secret society. And the most I know about it at that point is that she's my master. I'm her slave. I don't know anyone else that's in it. I don't know anything else about it. I was never introduced to the word DOS, actually, until it all came out afterwards.
And you're married, though. So does John, your partner, know about this?
No, nobody can know about this, apparently. Nobody can know about this. This is a completely secret project. And all my collateral, which by that point, she'd already collected a couple of naked photos of me. But again, she was like, they're just going in a safe. I'm not even going to look at them. And I was like, okay, super weird. But they were going to Keith. Like, and I just didn't know that at the time. Yeah. And then basically one of the first things that I was tasked to do was, I need you to seduce Keith, was what she said. And I was like, seduce Keith? Like, what? Like, and I was like, why? Like, does he know? You know, it was so far out there for me. But she's like, you just need, I was conditioned, like, you just need to do it. She has my collateral. It's for some reason, this is good for me. Like all these different stories I had around it. Yeah. And I remember I didn't do anything for a few days. I was like, well, how am I even going to seduce Keith? Like, what does that mean? And then I was kind of chided for it. You know, like, you need to act on this. I told you, you need to seduce Keith and you haven't done anything. So that's kind of just to give you a sense of like how this all started.
If I could try to understand DOS from, I don't think I could, honestly, but if I could try, one person did this to another person did it to master, servant, exactly. Servant. Is that the right word?
Yeah. Slave, actually.
Oh, it's okay. Master, slave. Did it just keep kind of continuing
also, what Monica was Monica was a slave of Keith. And so from what I understand in retrospect, what came out in the trial as well is that it had only really just started in 2015, which is what the year was of when I became a slave. And so I think I was one of the first experimental second line slaves is what they called it. Like, could they bring in more women on a second level to the first group of women that were 100% Keith slaves? Like, just knew that they were Keith's slaves and Keith was their master. Because obviously at that point, I didn't know that Keith was part of this. That was the initial part. But yeah, the way that you just described it is kind of accurate. But what happened over time was, so I was supposed to seduce Keith. Eventually, I sent him a WhatsApp message where I was like, your glasses look good or something like that. It was like totally benign. And he was like, that's not good enough, which was kind of weird to me because I was like, well, how does he know about this seducing thing? But again, I just wish I could go back and give myself like a, hey, think about this. Like, this doesn't make sense. But I didn't question anything at the time. So yeah, he basically groomed me into, well, you need to send me a naked photo. Like, this is how you seduce me. And then there was like more and more and more and more naked photos. And I had to send him a naked photo every day and all these different things. That went on for a long time.
And if you didn't want to, were you reminded of the collateral that they had on you?
Yeah. At one point I stopped sending them to him. And then Monica, as my master, came to me and was like, why haven't you sent the naked photos? So I was like, wow, everybody knows everything in this situation. And because she had the collateral, I was like, okay, well, she said, you can't just stop doing it. You're like, I didn't tell you to stop doing it. So you have to do what I tell you to do. So Monica and Keith were basically obviously in communication a lot. But the thing that I was kind of like gearing up to is that at some point Monica said I had to meet with Keith face to face and basically do, well, not even basically, I had to meet with Keith face to face and I had to ask him, will you take my photo naked, like live in person? That was what I was tasked to ask that question. But what actually ended up happening, and I don't really want to go into massive amounts of detail about that, but I had to meet him at her house, which is really disgusting, creepy little house that he had for things like this. He took me upstairs and there was like a bed with white sheets on that were kind of like stained and disgusting. And I was just like, oh my God, the most terrified I've ever been in my life. I asked him, will you take my photo? He told me to get undressed. And then he basically abused me sexually and also took my photo and then told me, I am your grandmaster. Like, you're in the circle now, like now you are kind of like, you can ask me any question you want. I remember him saying that. And I was just so terrified and disassociated through the whole experience that for one, my brain was 100% blank, but also I don't even feel like I was in my body. Like the whole thing was so terrifying that I never asked him any more questions. They're like, what is this? Like, what do you mean? You're the grandmaster. Like, I literally don't think I asked one question, even though he had even said, you can ask me anything. I'm pretty sure I asked nothing, or I don't remember asking anything. And then it just kind of continued from there. But that's how I got introduced to the fact that Keith was the grandmaster.
I'm so sorry that that happened to you. And again, for our listeners to really zoom out, we're an hour into this interview, right? And no. I say that, first of all, I want to continue for as much time as you possibly have. But I say that because these documentaries, I think, and headlines send the picture like that these women or people willingly joined a cult or a sex cult, and it was all very conscious. But really, this was maybe, I don't know how many years in that you were NXIVM, but I'm 7-8 years in already.
10 years in.
Okay, so you're 10 years into this. And the 10 years that they were, it started at 18. Like your entire brain was modeled and groomed. Groomed is the best word, I feel like, to warp reality into this is reality. Whatever Keith says is reality. And it took that many years until it became not just strange on many levels, but another level that involved sexual abuse. Is that correct?
Yeah, for me, that's exactly what it was for my story. Yeah.
It's a very slow, I put in quotes, warm up into that moment. And then you're in so deep where your friends, your family, your husband is there, but he can't know about it. You've got this fake collateral story about you. I mean, how is your mental health during this time?
Yeah, no, well, that was the thing. I would describe myself as like, I was going to use the word psychotic, but yeah. The horrible thing was that me and John, our relationship really was bad because for one, Keith had told me I was not allowed to have sex with John for 2 years. So we'd got married. We were supposed to be in a relationship. We'd said we were going to have a relationship. We wanted the same things. We wanted to have children and all these different things. Whereas I wouldn't even be intimate with him then. So everything was like weird, but he was also taking NXIVM classes, so he had, you know, he could like make that okay in his own way, in his own head. And I don't want to speak for him because obviously he's got his own story through that and whatever his thoughts were, but our relationship was kind of fiddled with by Keith right from the start. And I felt more like through those years John was another adversary. Like nobody was the safe person to me because he was constantly frustrated with our relationship because I was very cagey. I was obviously hiding things all the time. I never wanted to spend time together. Or if I did, I was very controlling about it because I didn't feel like I was allowed. And I was trying to protect my relationship from Keith because I felt like if I got too close to John, Keith would end the relationship. And he used to say to me, and Monica would say to me, if we tell you that you have to break up with John, you just have to be okay with that. And I'd be crying and like, please don't do that. Like, please don't make me break up with him. So I was constantly in some ways keeping him at arm's length anyway, for that reason. So I was like, well, I cannot show myself as too close to him because they're going to take him away. So he was definitely not a safe person to me, but he was someone I wanted to be with. And it was as complicated as it sounds, but there was all of that. Then I was also working for NXIVM in so many different ways and working all the time. Like they kept you so busy. And if I wasn't working, then I would be like running 10 miles a day. I was hardly eating because we were all extremely underweight. That was part of what Keith preferred.
How does that part work? Is that part of DOS?
Yeah, well, and I think India Oxenberg has spoken very publicly about how she was on like a restricted diet and had to ask for permission when she was allowed to eat and all these different things. I didn't have that with Keith, but Keith had always had with me where he'd said my ideal weight was like 100 to 105 pounds. Oh, and I don't want to be triggering to people with numbers, but other people have spoken about how 100 pounds was like apparently this like ideal number for all women, no matter what shape or size you were, which now in retrospect makes no sense. So yeah, I was basically undereating, overexercising, barely sleeping, anxious as anything, like off the charts, anxious all the time, working like, I was going to say like a slave, but I don't want to use that word, not in the right way. But obviously the slave was a label that we also used as what we were called.
Hey, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. As a nostalgic voice from your past, I'm here to remind you that amongst the stressful and chaotic existence we live in 2024, you deserve to get away. It's time for a vacation, no matter when you're hearing this. And let me tell you how you'll get there. The 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe. Want to bring the family to the mountains with the Santa Fe's available H-Track all-wheel drive? Well, it's got standard third-row seating and available dual wireless charging pads for the kids who just want to stare at their phone and not talk to you. You know what I mean. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
I mean, they break you down. There's no sleep. There's no food. You're in a trance. Years are going by. Your reality is warped. I mean, I know from being a new mom, as you do it, two nights without sleep, and I don't know, like, which way the sky is. Like, the disorientation process and how long it went on is something that people, I feel like, really need to understand. And hopefully you yourself can also, I know you have great therapists, but like, I would hope that that would bring you some also like self-compassion, because looking back, it's like, you know, what the heck, why would I do this? But when you're in that moment, your husband's there, your friends are there, like, it's just reality. I could see it. And I hate to bring up something so strange, but going back to how this all started, you know, you wanted to be a horse jumper. At this point, are you still horse jumping or training?
And that is, I think, an important part of the story, is that within a few months, not even a year, of me having been in the States, moved from my horse to the States to train with this person, she quit the sport entirely. And she was my lifeline, and I felt 100% dependent on her by that point. And she just shut the whole thing down. By that point, I was really underweight already and just so depressed. And I think I felt like ESP was presented to me even more again as like, you need to stay to get over your issues, because you obviously have so many issues. And I did have a lot of issues. ESP was not going to be the thing that was going to fix that. I think the bigger issue is that I'd come under a set of beliefs about how, what was going to happen there in America, and what was happening was so extremely different that it's quite understandable that someone might be struggling mentally at that point and not see a path forward for themselves when they're 18 and they've invested everything in moving to the States with their horse to train to be an elite show jumping rider. And I quit school at 16. I didn't have a backup plan. I had nothing. And so it was presented to me that I could carry on working and living for her just under a different, I'd be her assistant basically, instead of training as a show jumping rider. So that's kind of how that ended up continuing. It was kind of like swimming away from the beach, and then you're so far out from the shore that you forgot how you even got there. Because then I didn't go back to riding horses until ESP fell apart. And then I went back to working with horses for a year. But that's the crazy thing, is like, I think that I don't really know how else to say it about apart from that metaphor, but
yeah,
I never made it as an elite show jumping rider, basically.
And make it or not, I just, you know, this whole thing was how to be a better, reach your goals, be the person you want to be. And yet it actually takes you farther from where you want to be. But like you said, you're so far out, you don't even know how to get back to where you started, and they've got all this on you, and it's so all encompassing, and yet happened to so many brilliant people, right? Like there's a lot of smart people affiliated with NXIVM and DOS too.
Yeah. Well, and I think that just to define DOS, because I'm not sure if I don't think we did that, and just to jump back to that, but I think that it's an acronym that's a Latin phrase that stands for domination over the submissive women or something like that. So obviously I didn't know that part, but yeah, to think that that's where it ended versus where it started. And I haven't really actually zoomed out and looked at it like that. And I feel like it's like giving me goosebumps even now, because I think one of the things that, sorry, this is actually making me a bit emotional. It's like, I never really had a chance to grieve that I gave up on my dreams and like that my life could have been so different. And I think that there are so many things that I haven't had a chance to grieve that never happened because of being an ESP. The fact that, I mean, I'm so, so grateful that John and I have like salvaged our relationship, because that's what I would say is salvaged and salvaging in, as in concurrently, and that we have Zadie, a little girl now, but at 34 now, like I'd hope to have finished having children and like to be in a very, you know, have 3 or 4 children. Like I wanted a really big family. And I feel like there are just so many things that have kind of slipped away and that I didn't even notice. And it's hard to unpack that.
I mean, I'm not a therapist. I'm not any of that. But the timeline of all of this, I think, is really important, right? Keith went to jail how many years ago?
He was convicted in 2019 and sentenced in October 2020.
All right. So this story is still very much happening, right? Like, yeah. I think.
And he's appealing, but yeah.
It's not like this is 10 years behind us, or, you know, when we started, this was 2006. This isn't like when you started in 2000, I think you said 2006, right? This isn't 2005 when you started and this has been 20 years from now. Like, of course, you're still grieving, coming to terms, trying to put the puzzle pieces together, because so much just recently came to the surface. Even though DOS started in 2015, it wasn't until the trials that you even learned so much more about what you were part of.
Oh, totally. Yeah. It would take so long for me to tell. And I think people would probably fall asleep if I told the entire story. So I feel like I've tried to give relevant bits of information, but yeah, there was so much that I learned in the 6 weeks from the start to the end of the trial that was so deeply disturbing even then, because I didn't know it was happening. And it's just, and I think that was the same for so many people. It was just sort of like going back and seeing things for what they really were. It's so hard for your brain to do that when you're like, wow, that's what was really going on at that time. And that's what was really going on with that person. It's so disturbing. And some of the aspects of the trial, just the age of some of the victims, it's sick making. And those were things that I wasn't even privy to at the time.
So I say that because I've had the honor of knowing you without knowing that you were part of this, right? Like you and I have had an online friendship for a couple of years. I remember, you know, you once wrote me something really beautiful and I printed it because I was like, this woman's really, aww, like you stand out. You're a really special person that leads with your heart very openly, even after something that most people would have, you know, closed. When you told me that you were part of this, I was like, wait, I was trying to put the pieces together. And as much as I think it's important that you grieve and we acknowledge what you quote unquote lost, you know, not getting the career that you wanted. And I in no way mean to put like a toxic positivity spin on this or to downplay your experience, but seeing you now as a mom in that full role, having lived like 400 lives in this past life, there's a part of me that just knows that you are exactly where you're meant to be. Not that that should have happened, not that that's okay, but you're so much stronger because almost because your gut instincts were pulled out of you. And now you've had to go back to researching for who is Sylvie, you know?
Yeah.
And now that you're a mom, you know, how has it felt to have such strong instincts and ones that are impossible to ignore?
Well, yeah, I think that one thing that I did, which I am so glad that I did, is that when everything fell apart with Nexium, I was completely cut off from anybody involved in the organization. So I literally stopped talking to everybody I knew overnight after being interviewed by the FBI, because that's what my lawyer suggested I do. And I'm pretty sure I was asked to do that anyway. But basically, I went from having this huge circle of friends to knowing no one, like instantly.
But just to back up for a second, were you in DOS, you know, doing your day to day, and then the FBI came to you?
And subpoenas started being issued out to different people. I ended up being subpoenaed, which I think people would know that means you have to speak if you're subpoenaed. Sorry, I can't. That was kind of a light bulb moment for me because I was told in DOS, if you get a subpoena, tell me. Monica said, tell me and we'll get you a lawyer. I didn't tell them that I got a subpoena and I got my own lawyer. So I was like, no, this is my ticket out of here. So that was my first kind of like wake up moment, honestly, for me. But anyway, basically moved back to England overnight as well. After having done 2 days of interviews with the FBI in 2018, moved to England right afterwards and went straight full time to being with the animals again, being with the horses again, which I hadn't been since I was like 18. And I think that just connected me back to my instincts. And I spent a lot of time alone just with dogs and horses. And I think that that laid a foundation to be reconnected to my intuition, because that's really where I learned all of that, was through the animals in the beginning. And I think then, so stepping into motherhood has felt like an extension of that. I think what's true to my core is that I just love to be a support. I love to take care of, like, that's what feels most at home to me. And so this is the longest I've ever left Zadie, even.
I'm sorry to take you for so long.
No, well, yeah. I mean, no. And so I felt like leading up to this, that's what I felt the most kind of anxiety and guilt and sadness around, was not talking about this subject. It was leaving Zadie with John. She's not on her own, just so everyone knows. She's with John. She's totally fine. But essentially, it feels like home to me. And I would love to have more children if that's in our future, because I feel so grateful and lucky to get to spend my time with her and to just have the experience of motherhood, because I think mothering feels so like home.
And I mean, strong women raise strong women, and you're 100% the strongest woman I know.
Well,
truly. Truly, I know that this has been an incredibly tough share, but it is your truth and your reality that I think only, you know, an hour and 16 minutes, the longest you've left Zadie, it takes that long for people to even just get the surface, right? We just scratched the surface of your true story, and you're not what the court was trying to do. You know, you are not a broken woman who's desperate, or whatever they were trying to chalk up, whatever story they were trying to sell there, right? Like, you are so much more. You, even in that moment, you defied Monica. I don't even know who Monica is, but you defied Monica and Keith and said, I'm getting my own lawyer. Like, there have been parts of you, the strengths within you, just dying to come out. And I'm really excited to see how you continue to step into the true you know. I think almost that maybe Keith saw how powerful you could have been and worked really hard to put that fire out within you, because maybe he was fearful of you.
Well, yeah, that is definitely a different way for me to think about it. But I just want to say thank you to you, because I've been listening to The Truthiest Life from when you launched it. And I was so excited that you had a podcast. And I think the reason why I wanted to speak with you is because I do feel like you're able to be present with people in their darkness, in their pain, and then help them bring the light out of that and the truth through the darkness, through the whatever the complicated nature of their story is. And I feel like you're the person that I could talk to, and probably the audience that would want to hear it. I don't know if that's true, but that would be my sense.
There, my audience is compassionate, kind, patient, and here to support you. So, you know, when this comes out and in this moment, even, I just want you to know that you're supported, held, safe, and everything that happened to you was unjust, but you are still becoming the woman that you were meant to be, even though you might feel, I feel like gypped or derailed because of Keith. Like, I can feel your fire, and it lights me up to feel your power, because I feel it, I see it, and your daughter is the luckiest girl in the world to have you as a mom.
Oh, well, thank you. Yours too.
Thank you for being a guest and sharing your story. Is there anything else that you want to include that I possibly missed?
Not that I can think of. I mean, like I always say that I would answer any questions. And I think one of the things that is a little bit strange, and maybe this is about the kind of victim story, is that sometimes people kind of avoid you and don't ask you questions. And I think that they think they're doing you a favor, but actually that can add to the shame sometimes, because it's like, wow, I'm so like, my story is so weird or disturbing to people that no one will even ask me a simple question about it. And so, not that I think everybody would want that, but I think sometimes it is good to check in with people that have been through different things and don't. And if they don't want to talk about it, they'll probably say no if you did ask. But sometimes the not asking, the avoiding, and can actually make them feel more ashamed.
Totally understand that, especially when you know that people know, and you're like, yeah, you know that they want to ask, but they don't say it. So you're like, just, it's just festering within you. You know, us as humans, we're way smarter than we let on to be. And yet right. We oftentimes dance around the obvious, whereas conversations, when they come from the heart, how are you okay? You know, things like that versus the voyeuristic nature of a story. You know, I think there's always an opportunity to hold space for people, especially when we lead with curiosity from the heart.
I agree.
Thank you. I'll let you get back to Zadie and John. John, thank you for watching, Zadie.
thank you, John.
And thank you for living your truthiest life. I so appreciate you.
Thanks, Lisa.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.